Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we will go back in time, the seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Swick Enterprises, we're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 140-plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at Gridiron Greats Magazine. We're sponsored in part by MSB Sports Cards. Check out their website for one of the largest selections of football cards and memorabilia on the web at MSBSportsCards.com. And we're also sponsored in part by BST Auctions. Check out their website and their upcoming auction at BSTAuctions.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. Yes, he's back. He is a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Larcher. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Good to be back, Captain. Very good to be back.
Yep. Joe, I heard you passing out Seattle Seahawk football cards in Australia when you were down there last month. I heard that was the rumor. I had a few people call me and ask me about it, and I said I couldn't confirm or deny that. But I heard you had a nice time down there. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I would have got some odd looks handing that out. American football. Anyway. But, yeah, spent a month down in Australia. It's just one of those things that my wife and I wanted to do. And, we've been saving up for it. And finally just decided to, today is yesterday's tomorrow and pulled the trigger. So, yeah.
Sounds great. Well, we just went to Aruba for 6 days and we came home. But Australia is a very, very interesting country. I know my daughter was down there for a couple months this year doing some work down there, and she said it was a very, very interesting country.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, you're back. Welcome back. And this show today, we're going to be recapping the year of 2017. And again, I want to mention to our listening audience, especially those people listening for the first time, the podcast show started in December of 2011, and we ran 48 shows from 2011 to 2014 on the old Leatherheads of the Gridiron podcasting network. And I took a couple-year break revamping the podcast, and we restarted it here in 2017, with Joe continuing to be my co-host with several guest co-hosts in between because of Joe's being booked for those days. But in any event, this is our 18th podcast of the year, next year for 2018, we'll be back stronger than ever. We're going to be hopefully running at least 24 podcasts, including one live one from the National in Cleveland in 2018. So I'd like to start by talking and doing a little recap of the guests we had on each show and some of the thoughts and ideas
yep.
and memories we had of 2017 and some future views of 2018. One of the first shows we had was talking about with John Spano, who handled and is handling the liquidation on BST auctions of the Mike Blaisdell collection. And it was a
yep.
good show to start off our
yep.
our podcast season with, because as anyone knows, Mike by far and wide has one of the most incredible football card and memorabilia collections in the country. And Joe, what were your thoughts, A, coming back on the podcast, and B, a show like that for our first show?
Yep, January of 17. And, you know, Mike Blaisdell, as you mentioned, he's one of those guys whose face is on the Mount Rushmore of football collectors. We all know him. He's a friend, a personal friend, along with John Spano. And, you know, and it's when somebody makes it to the top of the mountain, they ring the bell. They look around a little bit with their collection, and then they descend. And we all get it. People's lives change. Kids go on to college. You know, you retire, et cetera. And at some point, you become a little stir-crazy with their collection. And we totally get it. Mike is just one of those collectors. My biggest fear with him moving on from his collection is that, you know, all of that mass of knowledge that's up in that big misshapen noggin of his would...
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would kind of disappear from the chat rooms and stuff that we're so used to seeing him on. And you can't
mm-hmm.
recreate that knowledge. He's been doing it since I was in, you know, eighth grade. He's been in the hobby, you know. You can't recreate that. That was my biggest fear, you know, when Mike told me he was, you know, going to sell a lot of his collection.
Well, you know, it's been my experience over the years, and I've seen a couple of bigger, nothing like Mike's collection, though, go on the market and the collector leaves the market. And I somehow run into him at a show or whatever, or they call out of the blue type of thing. And I agree with you. It is kind of scary that a collector of that magnitude
yep.
with his
yep.
or her knowledge actually just leaves the hobby and that's it. And I'm real happy for Mike that he is still staying active. And
yep.
Mike still has a few items in his collection he's keeping. And at the same time, he's still sharing the knowledge of what he has and what he knows. And again, Mike and I go back a long, long time, back to our SCD days back in the 80s. And, you know, we've seen a lot of different changes in the hobby, a lot of different
yep.
Movements in the hobby. And I'm very, very happy Mike went out on his own terms. And I think that's an important aspect of collecting. I know of several collectors who passed unexpectedly or quickly or really never came to terms with what's going to happen to the collection after
yeah.
I pass. And I'm always happy for any collector who does it on his or her own terms. Mike did it on his terms, and I'm pleased with that, to say the least.
Yeah. Mike assured us he came onto the show a couple programs later. Our first show back in January of 17, you know, John Spano was our first guest, and he talked about the collection and some of the things coming up in the auction. And Mike was a guest later on, you know, and he assured
mm-hmm.
us he's still going to be around in the hobby. You and I mm-hmm. still see him chatting on boards. He's still
yep,
there.
Yep, yep.
And
yep.
I've got his cell phone number. If I ever had a question, I'd give him a jingle.
Mm-hmm. And to
yeah.
me, you know, that is an important aspect, that, you know, stay active somehow, somewhere with the hobby type of situation, especially when your collection
yeah.
goes. I think it's very, very critical. The just as an aside, and I thought about it when I was looking at the script for today, several issues back in Gridiron Greats, we had a New York Giants super collector who unexpectedly passed very, very early in life, and he basically left his collection to his family. And I know the family donated some of the collection to the Giants, and I, you know, interviewing the family and talking about the collection, so on and so forth, I really felt bad about the whole situation because it was it was a shock to say the least. But then again, you got people who are in the family who are non-collectors; they have no clue what to do. You know what I mean? And I literally get that call once a month from somebody, or an email from somebody. Wow. Can you help me with, what I have? I don't know what it is. Blah 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 type of situation.
Wow.
Should I donate it? And it's tough. It's a tough situation to be involved in.
Wow, I had no idea.
So
yeah, I mean it
is what it is.
Congratulations
to Mike for what he accomplished in the hobby, and congratulations for a very, very successful auction, spreading those items to other collectors in the football world, to say the least.
And I was privileged enough to pick up a couple of items. Mike's collection, a couple Red Grange cards, Mike had, when we had him on as a guest, he talked about some of his favorite things and, how rare some of them were. And it gave me a lot of insight into what he focused on and what he considered rare. It was great.
Right. It was. And I do know people like yourself and several other big collectors who, like Jeff Payne, who picked up a few items for their collections from the Mike Boisdale collection. And I do say this, we're one hobby where we just lack showing that thread of where our items come from. And we should really start looking at, especially with football, the major collectors who've impacted the hobby. And if you do get an item from them, they really need to be noted. Not so much for being number one on a graded card site or whatever, but no, actually being involved in the hobby as long as they have, so on and so forth. So it is a good
point.
Province to have for the collector at the same time.
That's a very good point. I know the provenance of quite a few of my cards. I mean, obviously the Blaisdell ones I picked up. My John Dunlop from the 1894 Mayo set I picked up at the Dreyer, collection.
Yep.
And I've been to the Dreyer Museum a couple times and, gawked at the breadth of their collection. And I never imagined one day that the Dreyers would sell their collection and I would own, that card I was looking at through the glass cases. And when they split up their collection, I mean, there were probably three or four things like, I have to have that. And I was able to go out and get them. So, I mean, I definitely know the provenance of quite a few of my, the cards, my higher end cards.
Right. Well, that's good. That's what you need to know. All right. Looking at our second point of our show today, the inevitable card trimming issues. And everybody knows how I feel about that. Joe, you're more of an expert than me on card trimming thoughts, ideas, problems.
Yeah, this came, this topic came up after I wrote an article, for our Gridiron Greats about the trimming, the love affair between card doctors and the 1948 Leaf set. 1948
right.
Leaf is one of the cornerstones of any football collector's, collection. It's got the majority of our Hall of Fame rookie cards in it. Sid Luckman, Sammy Baugh, Bobby Lane, Doak Walker. I mean, you can go on and on. And it's because of the odd sizes of it, and I switched to millimeters to metric, for this one because it's so much easier to measure. But, just the odd variations. I mean, a card can be between, 55 and 60 millimeters on the short side and 60 to 70 millimeters on the long side. That's quite a percentage. So, I mean, I've been collecting that set in particular for over a decade, for probably, 13 years. It's been the set that I immerse myself into, digitally calipering each card I get, labeling, measuring, the variations, soaking cards. It's one of those sets. And just, probably about 4 years ago, I just started seeing PSA slip a lot of trimmed, very obviously trimmed cards through the doors and slabbing them. And it was just something I felt like I had to pop smoke on and just let people know that, just because a card slabbed doesn't mean it's authentic and hasn't been altered.
Right. And again, that just reiterates my distrust for the whole
yes
graded card market. Again, everybody anybody who listens to the podcast or knows me knows my feelings on greed and courage.
Yes.
And here's a really good example of, okay, so we supposedly have experts that are grading our cards, and I say that with a question mark sometimes. And here's an excellent example of a massive problem in the 48 leaf set. And is the problem actually really being addressed? And B, how long is it going to go on for? And C, how ridiculous is it that these card doctors really feel, you know, justified in doing what they're doing? I mean, besides the ethics of it, you know, their names to me are mud in the hobby, you know, and
yep.
and it's horrible. It's really horrible. And I think the hobby was, you know, patrolling itself a little more carefully, this would not be an issue and we wouldn't be talking about it right now. It would have been resolved and would have been taken care of and that would have been it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that I see as a major problem right now. So
where there's money to be made, I guess there will always be,
those
crappy people who are out there trying to make it. I mean,
it bothers me after all these years of being in the hobby. I still got to hear stuff like this going on, you know, besides, you know, wax packs that get resealed. Name it. It's been done in the hobby. And for what? What's the purpose? Yeah, you're right. It's money to be made. So, okay, let me rip off the unsuspecting person and that's it type of situation. And I think, to me, it was much more prevalent in the late 80s, early 90s as the card explosion took place. And I think it's more sophisticated today with much more advanced techniques, especially on higher graded or higher or more expensive cards. You know what I mean? And that really has impacted the hobby at the same time. It's not limited to football. It's with all sports, you know.
Without a doubt. Oh, we could go on and on. You touched on wax packs being resealed, and I bumped into that as well when I went to sell some of my wax, you know, in my sealed boxes, discovering somebody had made fake BBCE shrink wrap and stickers because I had, you know, boxes I'd purchased, and when I went to sell them, Steve Hart from BBC reached out to, you know, the person I'd consigned them to and said, that's not my signature on the sticker. You know, so I found out, you know, the boxes that I bought, you know, that I thought had BBC, you know, BBC, you know, authenticated by them. I found out that people were even faking those, and it made me shake my head at the hobby. It's like, oh my gosh, I mean, you know, just it's tough. I mean, you know, we're not even touching on autographs. You know, the prevalence of fake autographs in the hobby and memorabilia, you know, game used jerseys. I mean, it's a hobby. It's supposed to be fun. But I guess if somebody's willing to pay $1,000 for something, there's always somebody out there who's looking to, you know, be a step ahead of that.
Right. And unfortunately, to me, the long-term impact of it is very negative for the hobby. And that's why I'm happy what happened with the whole Maestro issue. But again, how quick does the second Maestro come out in the market? And there are many of them, I'm sure.
Wait,
you know what I mean?
Wait.
So,
you're absolutely
very
right. I forgot about the Maestro. Yeah, the Maestro thing. I mean, here we have, you know, we feel like that turtle that's being born that's trying to make it to the ocean. And we've got seagulls and rats trying to pick us off. And then once we make it to the ocean, there's even more stuff, you know, out there. I mean, that's why 1 out of 100 turtles live, I guess. But, I mean, here we are.
Yep.
I mean, even if something is authentic and not trimmed and slabbed, now we've got, you know, we've got Maestro shilling us up while we're bidding it. I mean, it's just, you know, one hurdle, one blockade after another, you know, this poor hobby.
Yep.
It boils down to as cheesy as that Joe Orlando shtick is, never get cheated. I mean, you know, educate yourself.
Right.
If you're going to collect something, educate yourself in it. You know, just, you know, that's why listening to a podcast like this is important, being on chat rooms, chat boards, and not being afraid to ask questions.
Yep.
Going to a national and asking people. It's all important.
Yep. Exactly. All right, moving on to a couple other topics. Two guests that we have. We'll start first with the very, very incredible collection of photos of Jeff Drum, who we talked about.
Yeah.
And then right after that, Michael Steele, who's a big Boston New England Patriot program collector. Let's start with Jeff and his collection. He was featured as a super collector on our issue number 48, an incredible collection of photos.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard. You know, photos, I don't collect a lot of photos except old vintage, you know, Grange and Thorpe photos. But, yeah, he was a great guest. He was fun and just classy. I love the guests you come up with. And 90% of the guests that Bob, you know, that are on the show are Bob reaching out to people. You know, it's like if Johnny Carson.
Exactly.
Calls you, it's like, well, of course I'll be on the show. I mean, you don't say no to the ambassador of football, Bob Swick.
Well, you know, what's interesting with photos, and I've always said this, there's been a lot of reprints of photos over the years. And back to our previous topic. I've only collected, and I don't have a lot, I have a lot of team photos in my collection, but I also have a handful of the old UPI and AP wire photos, which are pretty cool, especially if you can actually find them with the backing on the back where they have the blurb of what the photo was listed as in the newspaper. And those are pretty neat to collect. I have always enjoyed those. But, again, those are tougher and tougher to find. And, again, you got to make sure what you're buying is actually a real photo, to say the least. The other area that I've always loved is programs, and obviously Michael Steele was a great collector to interview with his Patriots program collection. And again, I got to reiterate for the 100th time on the show, back in the 70s, my mom would make us a couple sandwiches and throw a couple cans of soda in a bag, and my buddy and I would drive up to Foxborough, walk up to the gate, buy tickets, and basically sit anywhere we wanted in the stadium because it was half empty all the time. And, you know, we eat our sandwiches in the parking lot. And, again, Foxborough at that time, there was one way in and one way out. You'd park in an old field and walk down the, you know, a couple miles to the stadium type of thing. And it was a pretty interesting experience. So now the Patriots are gold. And tickets are very hard to come by, yada, yada, yada. It's an interesting contrast. And I always enjoy talking to a collector who, no matter how well or how bad the season was, they continue to collect their, you know, whatever their, you know, team card set, program, yearbook, whatever it may be. They continue in good times and bad times.
Yep.
And with the Patriots, there were a heck of a lot of bad years compared to good years over the years. So, truly,
Michael's
truly
story about you know, the New England, you know, the staff of New England, of the Patriots, reaching out to him to get some of the older programs that they had a gap in.
Right.
And
right.
They offered him tickets to, and he took them up on it. He just recently posted up a story about visiting a sideline with a press pass, visiting the sideline of a game that the Patriots invited him to, for giving them copies of the program so that they could display. And it just, you know, as a Seahawk fan, I'm not I shouldn't like the Patriots, but I don't know. I mean, Deflategate, Spygate, all that crap aside, I think the Patriots are a classy organization, and I've always liked them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Does Bill Belichick cheat? Sure he does. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. I think a famous Packer coach said that, so.
Yeah, they're a very upscale organization for their fans. They take care of their fans. I've always felt that when Kraft took over the team was probably the best thing that ever happened to them. At the same time,
obviously,
I think that was excellent on their part. You know, and they are fan friendly to say the least. And again, living in a territory where basically you got Jet fans, you got Giant fans, and you got Patriot fans, it's kind of interesting to see the Patriot fans are very, very dedicated to their team, followed by the Giants and followed by the Jet fans around here locally. So it's very interesting. And then we had a couple of guests who had a military influence. Dan Elsass, with his Chick Hartley Ohio State collection, and then Scotty Auten, who and I want to give a shout out to Scotty. He's currently in Iraq on a tour. He I emailed him back and forth during the Army-Navy game that he was watching over there, and it was pretty interesting. I got to say, the Army-Navy game this year was just great. It was great to watch. It really,
without a doubt,
makes me feel good. It makes me really feel good. I know you're a Navy man, and it just really made me feel good to watch it. A couple of thoughts on Dan's collection of Chick Hartley. To me, it's just such an incredibly specialized collection, which
without
is so unique and so historical. It's just great. I always say to myself, if I could just find that one niche, but I don't think I ever could because I'm such a generalized football collector from A to Z. But in his case, he just embraced it, and he's just got an incredible collection of his items, to say the least.
Yeah.
So
obviously I've got my Steve Largent. It's almost comical, you know, how synonymous my name is with that, you know, with Steve Largent. To meet another collector like Dan Elsass, who, you know, is focused on Chick Hartley and Ohio. I mean, he's shown me pictures of his office before. It's just, you know, he's stationed over in Italy. He's in Rome right now. In the Navy, I'm ex-Navy. Excuse me. We both talked about our time on nuclear submarines. Have a good connection with Dan. Just a great collector, classy guy. Always willing to to kind of give information on that stuff, but on his collection.
And
I do appreciate someone who's found focus like that.
And I will point out, Dan came out to the National in Chicago this past year, and I was very fortunate to grab him the first night he was there, and we ended up having dinner together with Brenda and myself and Eric Stang, one of our other super collectors, and we had a great meal, great time, great conversation too. Scotty, incredible Army Navy collection to say the least.
Yeah,
and I'm so happy I was able to hook up with him and talk to him about it. And again, like he said, once he's back in the States, he'll be contributing a little more back to Gridiron Greats magazine. But his collection is just beyond belief. And something I always enjoyed. I have bought and sold many Army and Navy programs over the years. I've had a lot of people ask me about them. And you'd be surprised. There's a lot of people that actually do collect Army-Navy programs and Army-Navy ticket stubs. And I over the years, I've been more than happy to help people out with their collections on them. I got a handful of Army-Navy programs left. But it's a great collection, something I highly recommend. And again, you don't have to go from the first issue. I mean, first game.
Yep.
Start in the 40s or the 50s or any time is a great time to collect them. We also have
I like Scotty a lot. I a decade ago I'd done trades with him. He also collected the 55 Tops All American set. Before he was on the show, he and I had had bought and sold a couple of cards back and forth, and our military guys always have a special place in my heart. So, I mean, I remember dealing with him from that because I was asking him where he was stationed and what he was up to and et cetera. It was nice to reconnect with him, all these years later and just remember how classy he was.
That's good. We also had on our show a stable influence and a stable contributor to Gridiron Greats magazine over the years, our Reverend Mike Moran, telling stories about his father, Hap Moran. He's such a great collection. I find that arguably, you're collecting your father's legacy, and story that's been very, very.
Yeah, I always joke around that you and I are collecting football history. Rev is football history. His family is football history. I mean, I don't know of any other collectors whose father played, in that era of football. I mean, it's walking, talking football history to speak to Rev. And I always appreciate it. I always love it.
Exactly. I've known Mike for many years now, and I have always found he never fails me to find something new and or unfounded that he did find for his father's collection. And I find that truly amazing. And it just shows you, too, how much stuff is actually out there that's still unfound. I hear from several collectors now, I can't find anything, blah, blah, blah. And I always say, well, you're not looking. You know, you're not going into the antique shops. You're not going, you know, to a paper show.
Yep.
You're sticking with, let's say eBay or the national card shows or whatever. There's a lot of other areas out there where you can be looking for items and finding items in the long run. And I think they're really out there, one way or the other.
I would honestly say the majority of my very esoteric things in my collection came from my friends in the hobby. I mean, again, I mentioned I'm a big Steve Largent collector. I get texts all the time, texts or emails from people all the time. Hey, did you see this card, this Largent card? 9 times out of 10, I saw it and or I got it. You know, I tell people, thank you very much. I appreciate it. But the 1 time out of 10 where it's like, I didn't see that. And no, I've never seen that item before. That to me is how you get those oddball items. You spread your wings in the hobby. You get friends, and you let people know what you're collecting, and those people look out for each other.
Right.
I mean, I know what my friends collect, and if I saw something that they were collecting, I'd definitely give them a heads up. So, I mean, suddenly you just, multiply the eyes and ears out there, on the ground looking for what you're collecting.
Exactly. And that also leads us into our Green Bay Packers super collector, Scott Walters. Scott, I met at the National this past year. It was funny. He came up to the table. He said, are you Bob Swick? I said, yeah. And he said, I subscribe to your magazine, said his name, and I knew right away who I recognized the name right away because we had emailed each other back and forth on some Packer items. And what a great story he has with regards to the Packers history that he collects and what he has in his collection.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go back to Rev real quick. When he was telling his story about driving while his dad and somebody were driving the car and they were drinking and who was that he was talking about? Was it, I forget. I jotted down my notes, on our agenda. That he was talking about
Scott.
Somebody.
Who?
Oh
boy. I don't know. I got to think about that.
I remember that story.
Yeah.
I'll have to reach out to him, but I just remember that. But yeah, Packers super collector. I remember that well because I think the Seahawks had just beaten the Packers.
Right.
In football, and so I was riding a high. That week, a very smug, glum, my team just beat your team high, and look at both of us. We're both going to miss the playoffs probably. Look where that got me. But yeah, that was obviously very close to your heart.
A disaster of a year for the Packers and Packer fans, to say the least. And again, as I commented to two people I knew, who were Packer fans. I told them straight out, you're the backup to one of the number one quarterbacks in the NFL. You have no room for error, and you have no room to make a mistake on the field. You have to be perfect. You know what I mean? Because you never know, as a backup, if you're going to be out there or not. And that's simple. And again, I'll give them some benefit of the doubt because the line has been really injured most of the season. It hasn't been a good year for them in any way, shape, or form. And they don't go out and get players either. You know, they do it their way.
Yep.
So, you're going to suffer through a 500 season here and there and type of thing. But it also shows to me Rodgers is not going to be Superman. He's not going to be a Brady playing in his 40s type of thing. So, it's going to be a tough fall.
Yeah, exactly. What I remember about that Packer super collector guest is just you two. You two, Green Bay Packer fans just talking and talking and talking. I think I could have gone out for a sandwich in the latter part of that show and not missed a beat. just the two of you talking about Packers, and I've said this 100 times. I've got the best seat in the house, being the co-host of this show. and some of the guests that get brought on, and just hearing you, you know, you're walking, talking football history as well, Bob, like it or not. So, I mean, hearing the two of you talk about Packers and, you know, collecting and you know, items you collect, it was fun.
Yeah, he was a great guest. But I'll tell you, our next guest right after him was our serial super collector, Robin Pauls. What a unbelievable show. And I'll also put in a plug. That was one of our most listened to shows of the podcast. It was amazing. He is just, you know, he is post serial sports cards, baseball and football.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah. We're both friends with Kirk Robinson, who also collects, you know, the post serial.
Right.
And
right.
I posed the question, who would win the death cage match, you know, like a Jeopardy style death cage match, you know, over post serial. And, you know, Kirk chimed in a little later on a chat room you and I belong to that it wouldn't even be close, that Robin would smoke him. And he said, Robin knows more about this set than probably the people who created it.
And I thought I knew a little bit about the, you know, the short prints and the double prints. I knew nothing after what I saw
nothing.
Him come up with. And I went through some of my, I have a handful of duplicates that I went through my regular 200 card collection of the 62 post set. And I said to myself, this is just mind boggling to me to see what he came up with and all the different variations on it and how he encaptured to me the real history of the 62 post serial set. I mean, it's just amazing to me, truly amazing. And
well, you
want to
talk about? Yep. Go for it. I'd mentioned earlier. I collected the 48 Leaf set. I feel like I'd immersed myself in the 48 Leaf set. You know, that's 13 years worth of, you know, you know 12, 13 years worth of collecting one set. You know, Robin had been putting this together, you know, for I don't even remember how long he said, but I mean, there's a whole different level of collecting to the point where you probably know more about the issue than the people who created it. I wish we could go back in time and Robin could, you know, meet the people who put this together. Like, hey, did you know that there's a variation of the, you know, of the photo in this and this? And the guy'd be like, I had no idea. I guess the printer messed that up. I mean, it'd be fascinating to talk to him. They'd probably laugh at us for getting this down into nuances of a certain set.
Right. And in that case, though, to me, a lot of the different variations are very legitimate variations because they were on,
without a doubt,
different serial packages, different size packages, so on and so forth. So it was, to me, there's a lot of interest in that because, again, historically, they issued these cards on their serial boxes, but they had different brands and types of serial boxes, so therefore, that is, to me, a very, you know, realistic variation, not, you know, a print error where ink got smudged or whatever. You know what I mean? And
I never bought, like, in the
90s, all the Pro Set variations. I mean, they were stupid as far as I was concerned. You know, they're printing errors.
Yes.
That's all they are, you know?
And, so you're right,
you know,
and
people,
I would agree with you.
You know, but the post-serial variations, to me, are realistic variations. I mean, they are.
You're spot on.
They are matched to the boxes, you know?
I spent probably 45 minutes going through Robin's website, just looking at the variations. And like you said, the tip of the iceberg of my knowledge of the set, you know, I agree with you. You know, I go back to the Leaf set because it's the one I know. And you're right. A lot of the variations, quote unquote, in that set are printing errors. It's, you know, maroon jersey versus red jersey on Grange, you know, white between the knees versus black between the knees,
Right.
You know, I mean, a lot of these are print errors, brown helmet versus tan helmet. And I'm pretty sure if we brought these variations to the printers, they'd say, okay, well, we ran a bunch of sheets with this ink, and then we got another batch of ink in, and we just poured it in. And all right, so I guess that one was a little bit lighter, and it came back with a tan helmet, brown helmet, really? You know, move out of your parents' basement, you know, and get a life, you know, to quote William Shatner.
Exactly.
So
we also had Chris Willis on the show, and incredible book that he wrote on Jim Thorpe, which Actually, Jeff Payne reviewed the book. It's going to be in this coming issue of Gridiron Greats magazine. Chris is a good friend of GG. I've known Chris for many years. Chris actually wrote for my old Football Times newsletter back in the 90s when he was a grad student. And he's just got an amazing ability to capture very, very interesting facts about something, especially obviously dealing with football, and writing a book on it, which was truly amazing.
Yep. Boy, and talk about the resume to back it up. I mean, you know, working with the NFL like he does, just having access to that.
Right.
I mean, just
truly.
Yeah. I mean,
he
immersed.
He
in
has
history.
A dream. He has a dream job too. For anybody who doesn't know, he works. He's the head of the NFL. He's the head of the research department at NFL Films, and so that's got to be amazing. I mean, that would be my kind of job.
So
I would walk
access
in every day.
To the material. Every day, like you said, yeah, access to, you know, Chris has access to material. He's immersed in it. He's part of it.
Right.
I mean, you know, how could you not, you know, just, you know, eventually start writing books, you know, and following up on this. He mentioned in the show, didn't he, that he was coming out with a, who was it? Book, wasn't it like Don Hudson or?
Yeah, he's working on that now. And I don't know when I forgot what he said his publication date is going to be. I want to say it was going to be 18 or 19. So he's working on that. He's doing the concepts on it right now. But I'm sure that's going to be an excellent book to read, too. And I never realized, too, again, especially a lot of the older Packer players, I really thought there was a lot written. There really wasn't a lot written one way or the other. So that should be a great book to come out with.
Great guest.
We also talked to John came back on. John Spano came back on a later show, and you and I talked about this actually prior to asking him about it. What he feels the most expensive rare football item that could ever come to auction. Give me some background on that, because I know.
Well,
it's,
you and I have talked about six-figure football collectibles.
Right.
You know, because. You've got the Honus Wagner, you've got the Babe Ruth cards in baseball. What are the most expensive football cards? And, you know, we've talked about it, you know, off air, you know, quite a bit, you know, in chat rooms, et cetera. So I just asked John, you know, what would be the most expensive football item that could ever come to auction? I mean, real or imaginary? And he had a pretty interesting reply.
And
that's your key
ball. I missed it. I'm sorry. And,
call that a segue.
If you have the TTO6 of football, the Honus Wagner card of football, we argued about this for a long time. I've been arguing about that for probably 5 years now. And
yes.
When he came up with it, you know, what you picked up on pretty much because it's up your alley more than anything, a game-used Jim Thorpe jersey that actually has the provenance of the piece itself. Is that really in existence? You know, can it be in existence? Can any real uniform jersey still be out there from, let's say, the 1920s or the 30s type of thing? And that's
a very good question.
You know, that's the real tough part of trying to understand, of trying to figure out, okay, what is the most rare cards? Okay, you could argue all day as far as cards are concerned, and I've said this many times, the Dunlop card, the anonymous card of the Mayo set, is probably one of the rarest cards. But unfortunately, or fortunately, they're out there. You just got to have enough money to buy it type of situation.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, at the same time, there's a lot of obscure, you know, you look at the Shotwells, you look at the Spaldings, you know, those are in a lot of cases probably one of twos, one of threes, one of fours that are actually there that are going nowhere fast in people's collection type of situation. So if we argue, again, a jersey from that kind of a player with that kind of historical background, that could probably be – you know, the most expensive item ever out there
and
for football memorabilia.
Think about,
you can also
think about the most famous picture of Thorpe. It's him playing for the Canton Bulldogs, standing on the side of the field, hands on hips akimbo, you know, looking at the picture. I mean, that is the most popular picture of Jim Thorpe. Agree?
Right.
It's the one you see a lot of. Imagine if that Canton Bulldog jersey had a tear or a smudge or a patch on it, and that jersey came to auction, and it's like, you know, and it had, you know, his name on it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. If it could be proved that the jersey in that Canton Bulldog picture was the jersey coming up, and it was in halfway decent shape, yeah, that has some firepower behind it. You know,
it would be incredible. It would be an incredible piece. And again, putting it in perspective, how do people spend $10,000-$15,000 on a Martin card, which is in theory a 101, and then they have no conceptualization of the true historical value of some of the items that come to the market? It's just beyond me. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
At the end of the day, Captain, we all collect pictures of men in tights on cardboard. I mean, I'm not going to wag a finger at somebody else who collects modern versus me. We all suffer from the same mental illness. So,
All right,
somebody who doesn't collect, who meets me and goes, "You collect football cards, huh?" I mean, so we're all odd from the outside. So,
exactly. Well, while you were away, we had Jeff Payne filled in. I had one show Jeff talked about his collection, which is pretty incredible. And then we also had super collector Mike Rich on the show talking about his collection. And again, like I said on that show, Mike and I go back many, many years trading cards. We traded cards without the precise value of cards being exchanged one way or the other. That's something unique about Mike. Mike's an old-time collector, old-fashioned collector, kind of like me, where you traded cards, and, you know, if trade was in your favor, okay. Excuse me, down the road you would find something, you'd send me, or whatever, you know, type of situation. I've traded with a lot of people over the years. I had one guy that used to drive me crazy because he had the exact book value for every card precisely in the condition it was in, so on and so forth. And I would just say to him,
wow,
that's what you feel it's worth, that's fine with me. I'm not going to fight it. I'm not going to even bother looking up the card value type of situation. And again, it goes back to shows back in the early 80s, which a lot of people don't realize. You go to a table. A superstar was a quarter. Up and coming rookie was maybe 10 cents. Commons were always a nickel. And older vintage superstars may have been 50 cents or a dollar type of situation. That's the way it was back then. And, you know, dealers made a pretty, you know, did well for selling a lot of cards. A lot more people collected sets back then than they do today. So, therefore, there was a lot of people looking for actual numbers of cards, so on and so forth. And I think that's long gone in the hobby right now, especially with all the different box breaks that go on and all that. So Mike's definitely a serious throwback to a different time in collecting.
You have a story of a card show where somebody walked in and sold a collection of football and baseball to a baseball dealer, and he didn't know what to do with the football, so he's walking out to the dumpster to throw them away, and you intercepted him. He's like, I don't know how to sell these. I'm just chucking them.
There's too many times I would go to the show and I would ask if they had any football cards, and they would look around, seeing so nobody else was seeing anything going on. He'd go into his box in the back of the table or whatever, pull out a cheese box, and he says, "Give me $5 for this. That's all I got," type of thing. I would rarely ever see football cards on a table, so I would always have to ask, "Do you have any football cards?" type of thing. And then all of a sudden, 1988-89. I was everybody's best friend because football started to get hot. And, I could use some 1950s cards. Can you give me a deal on them, like a nickel a card or whatever type of thing? And I just found great irony in the whole market at that time, seeing what happened.
Yeah.
But in the good old days that I went to shows, it was tough to find football cards, to say the least. So, and it was also equally tough for anybody who collected hockey or basketball cards, because they just weren't there.
Baseball
was the king, and, you know, and that was it, type of situation.
Still is, yeah.
All right.
Still is.
Talk
about classic old trades. You know, Jeff Payne and our buds, and he and I just completed a trade. I gave him some star player candy cards, and he gave me some Pottsville Maroon postcards. So
wow.
He and I both noted it was like being on the old school bus trading cards out of your lunch pail. All right, you give me three of those, and I'll give you two of these. Sounds good.
Yep.
I mean, we had a great trade while I was away, which is pretty cool.
That's good. That's good. That's what, you know, that's the way the hobby was. People don't realize that, to say the least.
Yeah.
We got a couple more points as we're winding down time here. Next year's National is going to be in Cleveland. And I remember the last time I was in Cleveland for the National, it was very interesting for me to say the least. So this year's National,
can you elaborate on that, Captain?
I felt like I went back in time where I was staying. Naturally, where the convention center is pretty much away from Cleveland itself. So I stayed at a Best Western, which was near the convention center. The town that it was in, which obviously is a suburb of Cleveland, I don't even know what the town was, or if it was Cleveland per se. It just reminded me of going back in time. You know, there was no restaurants there, nothing was open. You know, you go back to your room at night, and that was it. You know, that type of situation. So it was very interesting.
People in Detroit,
so I think this year.
People in Detroit make fun of Cleveland. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, and this year I think I'm going to look to staying downtown area where there seems to be life after dark, and either, you know, take a taxi to the show or whatever, or I may drive out there one way or the other. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Chicago this past year was Chicago, well, Rosemont, obviously, nice area, a lot of stuff going on, very interesting show to say the least. Cleveland should be a little different because there are some different dealers that go there. There'll be some different material to see. I did comment at the Cleveland show. I ran into a guy who, I think he just moved his collection of Cleveland Browns cards and he brought it to the show, and he was trying to sell certain things. I never have seen the organization of a table like his. He had binder upon binder of Cleveland Brown cards, and I mean literally every insert, every newer card, like 89 up type of thing. It's incredible, incredible display that he had. I don't know how well or how poorly he did, but it was amazing to see and watch there, to say the least. So, are you planning on coming out? The million-dollar question every year.
I will. I wish it wasn't in Cleveland, because if it was in Baltimore, Chicago, it'd make the decision easy. I love the people. I really wish I would have made it to the last one. You know, Dan Elsass was there. I go for the people. I go for the people. I've shown up there on a Thursday before or Wednesday, and not even made it to the National for like a day and a half. Not even walked the floor. Right. I'm just spending so much time with people. I will call the ball on that, Captain. And get
right.
back to you. I need to figure out. Yeah. We'll see. But
all right. Our last topic, and then I'm going to hand it off to you. Next year's collecting wants and needs. You got anything on your want list you're looking for or whatever? And I'll give you a couple ideas what I'm looking for.
You know, I want to focus my collection. I just consigned a couple more cards. You know, to Al Crispalli at Love of the Game. He was, you know, doing his West Coast tour, and I met him at my house, handed some stuff. I'm trying to focus it down. I used to be kind of all over in what I collected, and I've really narrowed it down lately. I sold my Nagurski a couple years ago. You know, I just had an offer I couldn't refuse, you know, per se.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I want to find another Nagurski. I feel like my collection is, you know, isn't complete, you know, without a Nagurski in there. I feel like a hypocrite.
Well,
how about you, Captain?
No. When you get an offer for an item in your collection that's unbelievable, you got to take it. I've always said that from day one. As far as what I'm looking at, I still don't know. And again, I'm stuck on a couple of different paths. One, making a much better attempt to get some one-on-one of oddball and insert cards pre-1988 and back for my collection. I'm also pretty stagnant on my Mayos. I always say I try to pick up at least a couple a year. I have over half the set in SGC 20 and 30. I've seen a lot of cards came to the market, in my opinion, in 17. I bid on several of them. I got outbid on them because I just didn't think they were worth the grade type of thing. And I really don't want to overgrade the set either. I don't want to buy 50s and 60s when I only have 20s and 30s. You know what I mean? And vice
yeah,
versa.
Totally.
And I don't want any 10s either, although I've seen some 10s that look like 30s, that type of situation.
Yep.
So I'm gonna mill around with that. I'm also going to mill around with deciding what I'm going to do with my 52 Bowman starter set that I have. If I should just – I started and stopped that set probably four different times now, so I really got to decide what I want to do with it. I'm leaning, again, unloading what I have in it, but I don't know yet. I'll have to see.
You're a completionist.
And I'm going to hand off.
You're a completionist, Bob. You got to hit the finish line.
Yeah, I know. That's what a lot of people have told me. So, and there's a handful of oddball stuff that I'm still looking for, including the 65 Tops Magic Emblem inserts. I need three more of those to finish the set. And those are just, I don't understand. I just can't find them. I see them at the National, they're not the ones I need. And this is just amazing to me. All right, we're down to only a few more minutes. Joe, I'm going to hand off to you.
I just wanted to wrap up the show by saying thank you, Bob, for reviving the the podcast. I don't think a lot of our listeners realize how much effort goes in behind the scenes, that Bob puts on with this. Getting guests together, I want to get a picture of where you sit to do the show, because you've mentioned it's a console, et cetera. But I wouldn't mind seeing where you sit to do the show, because I do mine pretty easily on my end. Just getting guests, getting scripts together, also publicating Gridiron Greats, which is our hobby, anthem. Bob, you are the ambassador to our football. I just wanted to thank you for reviving the show. I remember when you reached out to me again, and you're like, hey, I want to get the band back together. And I was sending you pictures of Ed McMahon and, Jeffrey Tambor, as jokes. But, I joke around. I do have the best seat in the house, just for this show, and I love being involved with the hobby. You make me more involved in the hobby, and I do love that. We call you a lot of names. The ambassador of football, the captain, the captain, and you're my favorite. Is just you're my friend, Bob, and I love being involved in this podcast with you, and I just wanted to say thanks.
Well, Joe, I appreciate your kind words, and again, I appreciate you being a co-host. I think we have a unique chemistry being on the show together, and I've had many, many very positive comments with regards to having you back as a co-host. Obviously, because this is not our full-time work, we obviously have other obligations. You're a busy guy, you're a business owner, you've got a lot going on, so I do appreciate the time you take out of your busy schedule to come on the show and the time you do spend on the hobby too, because again, we only have, as I tell people, 24 hours in the day, and that's really not enough time to do what everything that needs to be done type of situation. And it's interesting. I will promise though for 2018 to send you some photos of the man cave, because I had a new floor put in there. I've had a lot of stuff redone in the room. I had a minor flood in the man cave earlier this year, and I had some pipe work had to be done, and it was kind of a mess to say the least. So I had to move everything out. I'm in the process of restoring and putting things back in where they should be, type of situation. And again, one thing I tell people, I have about 400 books on football in my collection, and I have a large bookcase that I have all the books in, and I really got to reorganize it because it's a mess right now. I have to move a lot of stuff off a couple shelves when I had to move everything around. But I will promise that, and again, I want to wrap up by saying thanks for listening. We're sponsored in part by MSB Sports Cards. Check out their website, msbsportscards.com, and BST Auctions. Check out their website, bstauctions.com, for their latest and upcoming auctions. Joe, we'll be talking in 2018. And I want to thank all our listeners
Merry
for
New
listening.
Year, Ken.
We'll be back. Happy New Year, Joe, and Happy New Year from Football History and Memorabilia. Take care.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.